This is the EWN Radio Network.
You've waited. You've wished. You've hoped. You've dreamed. Now it's time to act. Time to move toward the life you want to live. This is EWN Radio, and you're listening to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust with your host, Leslie Green.
Hello, this is Leslie Green, and you're listening to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust on EWN Radio. Today, we're speaking with Mark Nepo, the beloved poet, teacher, and storyteller. Mark has been called one of the finest spiritual guides of our time. And with that, I could not be more in agreement. Many of us fell in love with Mark Nepo after we discovered his life-changing book, The Book of Awakening. I fell even deeper in love with his work after reading his powerful book, 7,000 Ways to Listen. Mark has published 16 books in total, and today we are speaking with him about his most recent book, Inside the Miracle, Enduring Suffering, Approaching Wholeness, which is also now out on audiobook, which he reads. With every Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust show, you know a focus of mine is talking about things that matter. So why should Mark's book, Inside the Miracle, matter to you? Well, if you're familiar with his work, then there's no need to even go there. You already know the wisdom he offers. But if you're unfamiliar with Mark Nepo, his book will matter to you, someone who wants to know how to answer the question, how do I move through an overwhelming crisis? How do I move through pain, for that matter, fear? Whether your crisis, pain, or fear is from physical illness, grief, or a major life change, this book will matter to you. And with that, Mark Nepo, we are honored to have you on Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm really happy to be journeying with you today.
And as we start our journey, we're going to set our intention as we do with every show, and our intention is this. May we be open to receive whatever gifts await us during our time together. May we recognize them as such, give thanks, and breathe them in. And so it is. So, Mark, this is exciting for me. I've been waiting for this. Oh, goodness. Okay, so let me start off with this. I just mentioned that this is your most recent book, but really, this book isn't some recent new creation of yours exactly. It was actually pretty interesting to read the beginning of it and see how it's an offering of 30 years of lessons. So later on in the show, I'd like to ask you specifically about some of these lessons. But for now, what can you tell us about the makeup of Inside the Miracle?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, this is a book that gathers almost 30 years of inquiry into suffering and healing and wholeness. And, you know, the original version of this book was a very, maybe 50, 60 pages of prose and poetry that came out in 1994, a few years after I was on the other side of the real heart of my cancer journey. And it, you know, was really offered at that time for folks going through anything difficult, and it was published by a small press and really, you know, reached people and then over time, you know, went out of print. And what sounds true, my publisher now, they've been wonderful in offering me an opportunity not just to reprint that part, but, you know, I feel very deeply that the things that really transform us, I don't feel we ever really get over them. They, you know, this experience turned me inside out. And so the lessons keep coming. And so I wanted the opportunity to not only take that early edition, but then I also took 10 essays from my collected essays that bear on suffering and healing and wholeness, and my collected essays are now out of print. And then a whole third, a little more than a third of new material that I've learned lessons and learnings from the last 15 years or more. And then I didn't do it chronologically, but I just put them kind of all together in one big pile on the floor and started to listen for the new integrated whole that they wanted to be. And so then put this together in an expanded new edition of all of this. And I'm so grateful I had the chance to do that. It was it continued to be a learning journey for me.
Honestly, it was a very different, I'd say, fresher than any book that I've read based on how it's organized and presented. But yet the themes are still very clear. So you had mentioned suffering, healing, and wholeness. Would you say that those are some of the themes that the reader can expect?
Well, yeah. So the book is broken. The book is a mix of poetry, prose, memoir, and essay, personal essay. And so the book moves. The first third is called Enduring Suffering. And we all, I want to say two things as we talk about this to kind of underscore our entire conversation. And one is that, every human being will have the opportunity to be dropped into the depth of life. And this is not to deify suffering or to glorify the difficulties in life. Like gravity, they're there. Like friction, and we'll talk more about that, they're there. And it could just as easily be wonder or beauty or surprise or a sudden, great suffering and great love drop us into the depths of life. For me, it happened to be this, but it could be anything. So for anyone who's listening, it doesn't mean you have to go out and, court some catastrophe in order to experience a deep life. So whatever we're given, we're asked to work with it and meet it with an open heart. So it just, for me, it was cancer, and what is opened in us is always more important than whatever it is that opens us. And the second thing is that everyone, when we do go through difficult things like cancer or very life-threatening or painful losses, we often in our society, we want to say, oh, those people are going through that, poor people, but thank God that's not me. But the truth is, we're all the same. And when we go through difficult things, it only brings into more clarity the same challenges that everyone goes through, just on a more subtle level. So this book is not, while it is, I hope, helpful for people who are going through difficult challenges, it's not just for people who are ill or struggling. It's for everyone, because the lessons are transferable. And so the first third of the book speaks about enduring suffering, meeting suffering. And the second deals with approaching wholeness. And I say approaching because I don't think we ever arrive anywhere. I don't believe personally in a arrived state of enlightenment. I think being human, we fall down and we get up and we're clear and confused. And today I'm sensitive and tomorrow I'm clumsy. And with each time that we're awake, we get a little more clear and a little more wise. And the third part of the book is called Still Here, Still Wondering. Humbly that, no matter how much we learn and where we've been, no one is exempt. I know a lot about fear and pain and worry, and but that doesn't mean that I'm exempt from fear and pain and worry. It's still there because it's part of being human.
Well, I like the way that you set that up, Mark. And going back to your first point where you said that every human being, let me see if I can remember. So you said every human being will have the opportunity to be dropped into the depths of life. One of the things that I remember that you wrote in the Book of Awakening, and the only reason I can remember this so clearly is I wrote a whole blog post about it, you kind of wrote about the flip side of that. You said that while much learning comes from crisis and pain, not all of it needs to. We don't need something to go wrong in order to change. And so I really like the way that you acknowledge both there.
Yeah, and I think that it's very important. You know, we are asked to, rather than finding heaven on earth, I think we're asked to release heaven on earth by living here completely, by meeting, you know, by meeting the river of experience with an open heart. Everything we carry within us gets a chance to come out. And it's, you know, and it's interesting, and I talk about this early in the book, but to suffer literally means to feel keenly. Well, in order to know joy and love and beauty, we have to know, feel keenly. So life presents itself as an entirety, as a whole, W-H-O-L-E. And the challenge for us as human beings, which is somehow, I think, it's just in the kind of innate order of the universe, is that we have to take life in. We can't sort it out. We can't say, oh, the people have tried to do this since the beginning of time. Understandably, oh, I'll only take the pleasant things, thank you. You know, you can keep the bad things, the difficult thing. But it doesn't work that way, at least my experience is. You know, if we were together in the same room and, you know, I asked you for a glass of water, and we all know water is made of hydrogen and oxygen, I couldn't ask you for the hydrogen only.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you could separate it, it would no longer be water, and it would no longer be quenching. And it's the same thing with the water of life. Of course we want to say, no, just give me the contentment and the peace and the love and the tenderness. I don't want all the tough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it stops being the water of life, and it stops being quenching, and somehow life is made just difficult enough that we need each other. And I think this ensures the journey of love.
Well, on that note, I'll say that I'm Leslie Green, and Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust will continue in just a moment with poet, philosopher, teacher, Mark Nepo. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Hello and welcome back. For those new to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust, thank you for joining us. The show was created to encourage you to live your life to the fullest through accessing your love, self-love, trust, understanding what it truly means to trust yourself, knowing that trust begins within you first, and your pixie dust, your belief system. As you know, this show is named after my book where we explore these three elements through story. Each chapter begins with a quote from someone whom I, one, admire, but two, someone whose words really got the feel of the chapter right. Well, Mark, your words are front and center. Your words set the stage for my entire book by offering the quote for Chapter 1, which is also much of what I suspect we'll be discussing today. And the topic is surrender. Because under when you think about love and trust, and even under your pixie dust, your belief system, there is an essence of this letting go or surrender, and that's exactly why I chose you to start off my book. And for that, I wanted to thank you for your words.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You know, I think surrender, and it's important as we talk about surrender, surrender doesn't mean resignation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, surrender is more about what is the proper use of our will. So, you know, the way a fish finds the current and then swims with it, that's more what we mean, or what I mean by surrender, is that we look for how to cooperate with the currents of life, not that we are creating something out of nothing, or that we're controlling or manipulating or bending life to our wants, but that we're looking for how do we let go of what we want so that we can discover what we need.
And in this, I'm wondering, I wanted to ask you about your subtitle, because when we talk about surrender and we take your subtitle to Inside the Miracle, we take the enduring suffering, approaching wholeness, does surrender have a place there?
Very, very much so. You know, I think that we are asked, every one of us, to both survive and thrive. And again, these things become more clear in more acute situations, but this is everyone who's living has to develop how they're going to do this, because we need to survive, but if we only do that and we never thrive, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to negotiate and survive the outer realm world of circumstance, but we need to thrive. It's what I call enduring and endearing, making things dear, getting through things, but also making things dear and beloved. And so when we talk about surrender, my experience is, it's my will helps me open my heart when my heart closes. And my surrender let whatever life brings me come in my open heart. So the purpose of my will is to open my heart when it closes, to get up when I fall down, and this leads to about trust, because I think one of the things, and I speak about it here in the book, is that being human, we will encounter times in our life when we will lose our trust in life. It doesn't mean that life has become trustworthy. It means we've lost touch with the basic elements of life. And so we need, each of us, to develop a way to restore our trust in life when it seems out of reach. Everybody, it doesn't matter what your faith is or how strong you have a belief in life, being knocked around by the weather of circumstance will throw us off, and we'll get up a little groggy, and we'll have to refine that trust. And the word trust, as I'm sure you know, literally means to follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
It literally means to follow your heart. So this all ties into surrender. You know. When I have lost sight of things, my will helps me look around and try to get back in touch and move toward what is precious, which is what the word appreciate literally means. The word appreciate means to move toward what is precious. So when we need to know this for the times that things don't feel precious, for the times that we have lost our trust, for the times that we're a little beaten up, and then what do? Well, we got to get up. we have to open our heart and move, and because everything is precious, just move to the nearest thing before you and give it the full presence and attention. And then the surrender is like opening that valve, opening that doorway, that threshold, and letting life touch us. Because it's being touched by life that brings us back alive.
And as you mentioned earlier, these lessons, they just keep coming. And I guess what I'm wondering here is, because I got the sense when reading your book and I was reading about surrender and suffering and wholeness and these lessons that just keep coming, it's almost as if the book were alive and kept growing. And so my question for you is this: what, if anything, have you experienced in terms of continued growth since publishing this book?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I think, you know, there are a couple of things. I thank you for asking that. Because let me also, just before, as a way to start answering that, say that, you know, for me, and I imagine this is true for a lot of writers and artists, but I write about what I need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write about what I know. If I only wrote about what I knew, I would write very little. You know, I write about, and for me, the life of expression is how I learn. So, you know, I wrote, you know, obviously, the Book of Awakening. I needed to feel more awake. I wrote a book about courage because I needed to learn how to be more courageous. I wrote a book, The Exquisite Risk. So I needed to learn how to take more risks and listening, 7,000 Ways to Listen. And with, you know, with this book, I think what I've been learning is how precious, and it's kind of like a returning around to the initial lesson of almost dying, but now all these years later, it's even more precious. You know, I've experienced, I guess what I've been learning is that all things are true. Mm-hmm. Not that all things are fair or just, but all things contain truth. And, you know, I know that, and this goes back to surviving and thriving, you know, we are taught at an early age and through school, and we are taught with our minds to learn how to sort, prioritize, and choose. We're taught how to problem solve, which is a great skill to navigate survival. However, life has taught me that while it's a skill, it's not a code to live by. That while I've been doing that and knowing how to do that, the deepest experiences in my life have actually asked me to open my heart up, not to sort, choose, and prioritize, but to absorb everything and integrate. And so when I can let everything and not choose, when I can say, yes, all things are true, and let whatever I've been given into my heart, then it somehow releases the logic of spirit, which is not like the logic of the mind. So I've been, you know, learning this, like that third part of the book, Still Here, Still Wondering. You know, I've had a lot of, in the last few years, my wife and I have had a lot of loss. At the same time, while, you know, I've lost my father and my wife's mother and our dear, beloved dog, Mira, and we now have a new dog, Zuzu, who's right here, right now, it might be. But but at the same time, you know, everything that's been happening with my work in the world, and the work that I'm exploring, and the wonderful reception of it is beyond anything I could have imagined years ago. So it's not like, oh, I need to turn from the loss to the good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, the losses bring down these good things. No, all things are true. They're all happening at once. And in the same way that we lift weights to stretch our muscles, I think the heart is asked to open and let all of it in at once and not choose or flip a seesaw from happy to sad, clear to confused, good to bad. No, it's all a part of the life of feeling. And I've been learning that our feelings are the only way to, they're the only colors we have to paint with.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only colors we have to paint with. And we need, and I know I need to, and I think we all do, need to trust them more. We are more than what happens to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I was listening to you in your response, you mentioned continued growth in there. And I had an aha when you said that, because periodically within your book, you included, questions to walk with. And it just dawned on me, did you include those for our continued growth, the reader?
Oh, yes, for both. I mean, they came to me for me and for you. And, you know, this is because, you know, my commitment, especially because of being a cancer survivor, things are only abstract if we don't personalize them. So anything that I've been able to do, and I've been doing this now with several books, I think I started with Book of Awakening, but then with As Far as the Heart Can See, which is a book of teaching stories of mine, and in all the books since, 7,000 Ways to Listen and The Endless Practice and now Inside the Miracle, I have been committed to having some kind of offerings of questions, journal questions, or what I call table questions, that are questions for dialogue with a loved one or a friend, you know, as a way to invite the reader to personalize what these inquiries are about, to see where it lives in your own life, because all of what I share is only an example, not an instruction. If anything that I speak about moves anyone in a way, then it's up to that person to see where it lives in their own life. And I believe very strongly, and this is in my work as well as in my teaching when I get to be with people, I believe that my job is to help people, introduce people to their own gift and wisdom. Because everyone has what they need. If we can only be open enough and still enough to access it.
Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust will continue in just a moment with poet, storyteller, guide, Mark Nepo.
Is some of this trust talk making sense, but you'd like to learn more? Learn better through story rather than step-by-step instructions? For some things, step-by-step instructions are a necessity. But when it comes to the softer skill things in life, things like learning to trust yourself and love yourself, the gentle nature and subtlety of a story can be a much better teacher. In Leslie's book, Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust, available in Amazon, she shares 50 true stories, all with loving yourself and trusting yourself as the main characters. You will also find chapters on letting go, finding your inner strength, the gift of surrender, and even an entire chapter dedicated to pixie dust. Yes, in case you're stumped, Leslie comes out and tells you what the pixie dust actually is and how you can apply its magic directly to your life. Not just another inspirational book full of feel-good stories. This book has teeth and will provide you with a practical approach on learning to love yourself and trust yourself, to find a place of inner peace. Take a spin for yourself. Read the first chapter completely free. Leslie's gift to you. Visit her blog, trustlifetoday.com, to receive a free copy of Chapter 1, You Are Not Alone. Or go directly to Amazon for your very own hard copy or ebook version of Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. Begin today to experience the magic within. And now, let's rejoin Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust with your host, Leslie Green.
Hello and welcome back. You can listen again and share this episode on Inside the Miracle with Mark Nepo on pixiedustradio.com. Now, Mark, it just dawned on me that some people may not know about your cancer journey and your story. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm 64, and when I was in my 30s, so almost 28 years ago, I came down with a rare form of lymphoma, and it appeared in my skull bone, and it grew, a tumor grew, pressing on my brain, and it grew to the size of a grapefruit. And it was pretty dramatic and frightening. And I had never been through really anything, you know, I mean, I've been through normal stuff and, you know, broke a bone playing sports or something like that. But I've never been through anything really, you know, this serious. And I was terrified of everything. You know, I was really, really frightened. And my karma was that because it was a rare form of lymphoma, it took a while and a lot of tests and different procedures to discover what it was exactly. And because this was so dramatic, I had to do all of the tests and procedures awake with only local anesthetic at different times because they were saving general anesthetic in case at any point they said, oh, now we've got to go in and do something major. So, of course, I had to face my fears. And I learned very early that I was so afraid of everything that I exhausted myself. And I had to, because I exhausted my heart, I had to start to discern between sensations and procedures and experiences because I couldn't respond to every single thing at 100% off the chart. So, you know, I had to decide, yes, you know, if you're in a medical setting and you're being handled, you're being poked, you're being moved around and people are trying to help you and some people are gentle and some people are not. But is every contact pain? Well, no. I had to discern, okay, what is really pain and what is just irritating or annoying or I don't like it because I couldn't maintain that. So that's just a kind of a little side journey as we tell the story. So, you know, I was blessed that, you know, hours before a craniotomy, which was a brain surgery, I was sent home by an angel of a physician who said, I really don't know what's happening, and I want to do more tests. And then when I came back in and I had an open biopsy where I was awake, where he was taking a sample from this tumor, and it was discovered it was this rare form of lymphoma, and I was thrown into the world of oncology. And so then I was, you know, very close to having spinal chemotherapy and whole head radiation, and the tumor vanished, and it was a miracle. And I was thrown back into life, like spit out of the mouth of the whale, like Jonah, and there was no normal to return to. And within 10 months, because this was so dramatic on my head, that no one, including me, had noticed that there was a very small sister tumor growing on a rib in my back. And so in 10 months, that grew and came back larger. And now I was really in despair. And now I was afraid that I would die. And I felt I had lost all confidence. I thought, did I waste this miracle? Did I somehow do something wrong? Did I not make good use of the second chance? And now I tried to do all the things that I did before, and none of them worked, and I had to have that rib and its adjacent muscles removed surgically. And then I started to understand that the surgeon was part of the miracle. And then because the cancer was very puzzling. I was a candidate for very strong chemotherapy, so within a few weeks after that rib was removed, I was barely not even healed, and I had to go through very aggressive chemo, which in 4 months, that started to kill me. And so I needed to stop the chemo. And from that point, I have been blessed to be well ever since. And I learned that miracle is a process and not an event, and that even the damn chemo was part of the miracle. And yeah. So one of the main things that I learned through this journey, and it's affected all my life's work, is that, you know, I'm Jewish. I was raised Jewish. But during all of this time, I was blessed to have people from every tradition, including a friend who was an atheist, including a scientist, to offer me some form of kindness or healing or blessing. So to still be here, I was not and am still not wise enough to know what worked and what didn't. And I feel that I was challenged to believe in everything. And so all these years, all my work, I've become a student of all paths, committed to revealing what I feel is the common center of all paths and the unique gifts of each. And the other thing I would say, and then I'll pause here, is that not through any wisdom on my part, you know, I've always been a heart-centered person, but before my cancer journey, I really spent my time in my mind, even though I was inquiring into the heart. I wasn't living from the heart. And I woke up on the other side of this with no wisdom on my part, but I just woke up and everything had dropped into the heart of me. And ever since, my mind has served my heart and not the other way around.
Well, and I wonder, because you say that you learn to listen to your body and to trust your own intuition. So talk to me a little bit more about that, because is that what you were just talking about before I asked that question, is how you were able to listen to your body and trust your own intuition?
Well, I think that, yes. You know, one of the things, and I felt this intuitively, that while I needed the surgeon to remove my rib, my job from the inside was to make sure that that tumor didn't resist, that when he opened me, I was meeting him from the inside, so all he had to do was take it out. Now, what does that look like logically? I can't tell you. I just know that was my job, and I had to use all of my presence and all of my strength to offer up, to say, I'm letting go of this. Whatever it is, why this is there, I can't tell, but I need to pass this off to the surgeon who's helping me live, so that when he opens me up, I somehow, my body is meeting him and saying, here, take it. But he doesn't have to go around hunting for it. So my job, I think the job of our intuition and knowing our body is to bring what's inside to the surface, bring what's inside to the surface. And, you know, clearly, if you look at the story I just told, and, you know, I had to make different decisions at every part of the way. I had to first say, no to craniotomy. And then I had to, say yes to surgery. And then I had to say yes to chemo and then no to chemo. And it, you know, can look from the outside like it's inconsistent. But at every point, I had to listen with my heart to my body and my soul to know what step I needed to take next in order to be here to talk to you today. And so everyone, if someone's listening who's going through something, while I encourage people to have friends or loved ones, and if you don't have friends or loved ones, make a friend. Just get a friend to help navigate the medical journey so that you can spend time preparing inwardly and listening to your body so that you can participate in your own healing. Let me just say a word about what I just said about make a friend. And I don't mean that in a harsh way, that, you know, we all go through different passages in life when we have people around us and when we don't. But what I learned through all of this, because some of the people I was closest to in waiting rooms, to this day, I don't know their last name. I don't know where they live. I don't know what they do for a living. But I know them more intimately because we faced life and death together. And so, so this is a both and. This is not an either or. While, of course, we have to discern who do we trust and can we become close to and who's a good partner and who's a good friend and who's reliable. And at the same time, a lot of those discernments and requirements that we put on friendship are all in our mind, because when we are pushed to it, when life is raw and before us, all we have to do is lean to the person next to us and say, "Help, please."
Mm-hmm.
And how can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And we're a lot closer than we think when we're pushed to it.
Yes, we are. And you make some excellent points there, because you do discover people that, you know, when you're waiting in a waiting room. So I was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 40 with my first and last mammogram. So I went in not knowing, I didn't have a lump or anything, and I went in just to have a mammogram. And lo and behold, it came back as an aggressive form of breast cancer, and have not had to have another mammogram since, because there are no breasts to put into a device anymore, into a mammogram, since I had a double mastectomy to alleviate that aggressive cancer. But I say all that to say that even my closest girlfriend, sometimes I didn't turn to during that time. I made a friend. I made a new friend, somebody that was in that tribe, that it was exactly what you were talking about, Mark. How can I help you? This is how I need you to help me. We speak the same language. Our experiences are different, but we're going through something that's so similar. How can I help you? How can you help me? So thank you for pointing that out.
Well, thank you. And thank you for sharing your journey, too. And, I think it's so important that, we learned this even more as we lost our beloved dog, Mira, who was like a child to us a year and a half ago. And, it was interesting and challenging and painful that some people in our life couldn't journey with us in our grief. And it really affected the friendships. And other people, showed up. And I think one of the lessons here for me is that, whatever opens us up, our challenge and our call is, are we going to keep each other company or not? And not to judge or evaluate, oh, gee, it was only a dog. Are you going to get over it? Or it might be something else, like say you have a friend who really wants a job and they get the second interview and then they don't get it and they're crushed. And it's not our place to say, well, it was only an interview. Why are they so upset?
Mm-hmm.
Or your aunt, the favorite aunt might break a favorite mug of hers. And it really sends her into a tailspin. And she's depressed for a few weeks. And, it's not our place to say, it is just a mug. What's the deal? No.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said in the beginning, everyone will have an opportunity to be dropped into the depth of life. And the only thing is, are we going there together? Because not just to help each other, but because when we go into that depth, we all grow for going there together. Not only do we get closer, but I grow if I keep you company. Because I can't keep you company, and one of the pieces in the book is called Love Suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I can't keep you company without experiencing suffering of my own. And this is the courage that love requires, I felt this in my cancer journey, and I'm sure you experienced with the people who were there for you, it was clear to me that the people who were taking me to treatments and doctor's appointments we're getting burned out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, gave me the chance to say to them, you know, you can, it's okay to tell me you're burned out. Like, I know you love me. It doesn't mean you don't care, but you're human too. And let me help you. You're helping me. And then I get to be a part of my own healing team, because then I'm needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I help too. And so, you know, strangely, in the most powerful moments when we're going through something and someone is there with us, it's hard to tell who is ill and who is well, because our love is, we're so much experiencing the sea of that together.
When we return, I ask Mark a final question about the lessons he has learned. Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. We'll continue in just a moment with Mark Nepo. Back in a moment.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hello and welcome back. You can listen again and share this episode on Inside the Miracle with Mark Nepo on pixiedustradio.com. Now, one thing I want to mention to everybody is this weekend on January 23rd and 24th, Mark will be holding a weekend workshop in Boulder, Colorado. Mark, can you tell folks a little bit more about how they can learn about that? Is that through SoundsTrue.com that they can get there, or MarkNepo.com?
Both. You can get it through my teaching schedule on my website or through the events window at Sounds True. And this is going to be the publication workshop weekend that Sounds True is going to host, and it will be held at Naropa University. So I'm really looking forward to it. And if anyone's interested, you can find out about it through there. It'll be 9 to 4:30, both on Saturday and Sunday.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And I would like to ask you one final question, and it's about painful experiences. Because I read that you welcome everything, even the most painful experiences. I remember reading in your book, one thing that you didn't mention that I do remember from your book is around when that rib was removed, and then you had that very aggressive chemo that had to be very painful because you were vomiting quite a bit. So if you could imagine trying, you know, having to vomit when you have a rib removed, I can't even imagine how painful that must have been. Yet you say that even the most painful experiences, in order to inhabit the wholeness of life and to stay in conversation with life, that we must do that. But how did you do that?
Well, thank you. I'll share that story. But let me also say about this that when I say welcome, it doesn't mean that we go look for painful experiences.
Okay.
Things come to us, and most of the time, the things we fear, when we feel afraid, they're already inside us. They've already crossed in, and our job is to let them through. So the same way a flag that blows in the wind, it couldn't be more immersed in the wind, but it doesn't hold on to the wind. And so when I say welcome, what I'm really talking about is that, like that flag, we will have things move into us because we're human. And our job is to welcome them all the way through, because we, by resisting them, we often make them take up residence. We, like, hold on to them and they actually stay in us longer than is necessary. So I think, you know, this moment, that which was a profound moment for me, and I think, you know, we don't know until we're in it. This also speaks, I would say, to the difference. You know, I've been both a patient and a partner of someone who, you know, my former wife, who went through a different kind of cancer. And it's a very different experience of different pain. When you are going through anything yourself, the pain is known. And the focus is, oh, my God, how do I get, is this going to last? How long is this going to last? Can I get through it? When is it going to end? Will it return? But the pain is known. But when you watch someone you love be in pain, the love makes that pain greater than it is, no matter how bad it is, because you love that person. And so the pain in a loved one is a different kind of pain, because it's almost unbearable to watch someone you love suffer. So anyway, I had my first chemo treatment, which was botched. It was a few weeks after my rib was removed. As you said, I was getting sick from the chemo, and I didn't have the proper medicine. They only gave me oral medicine, so I couldn't keep it down. And not really knowing, like, well, okay, is this going to keep happening? And let's just wait and see. And eventually, in the early morning, you know, like just before dawn, we did go to the emergency room. But just before that, I had been sick all night. That rib, missing rib, was very sore. I began to cough up some blood. And my former wife, we were in a Holiday Inn outside of New York City, because the treatment was at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. And in her pain and her desperation, and she cried out in tears and in anger, "Where is God? Where is God?" And I was crouched on the floor of the room with my elbows on my knees, and somehow I said, "Here, right here." And I don't know where that came from in me, but I think I've spent many of the years since, in all of my teaching and my writing, trying to understand what came to me in that moment. And one of the things I learned, not right away, but by being with that in the weeks that followed, was that I was understanding in a felt way that while my life was broken, it didn't mean that all of life was broken. And while I was, frightened and hurting, and I didn't know where this was going, the sun was coming up. Mm-hmm. And somewhere down the road, a baby was being born. And somewhere a mile away, some couple was making love. You know, and somewhere else, a boy was having an insight for the first time in his life. And aha. So, you know, we often play seesaw in life. We often, understandably, you know, when we're in pain, then we see the whole world as painful. When we're confused, then we see the world as chaotic. We want to paint the world as an extension of what we're going through. But the truth is, and I think healing and resilience lie in this truth, live in this truth, that what's happening to me was true, but it didn't mean the whole world was broken. It didn't mean all of life, the miracle of life, had stopped. And so one of the challenging and amazing things is that when I'm in pain, I need the company of someone who understands what it is to be in pain, but I need to experience life that's not in pain to heal. When I'm in fear, I need someone who understands what it is to be afraid for company, but I need the safety of the rest of life in order to heal. So we need both of these things. And I think that, you know, when we talk about being in the moment, we need to be not just in our moment, we need to open our heart to the rest of life that is still living. And I know that, you know, wanted me to share this poem, which I'll do, which is called After Mira. And as I mentioned, Mira was our beloved dog who died. And that experience of grief and loss was a way to talk about all grief and loss, and and the journey that it opens us to. So this is called After Mira. One day, we think we dare to love, but find we've already given our heart and have no choice but to work our fingers in that unexpected garden. And unimaginable things grow. However long the entwining of aliveness lasts, we feel blessed, like the one dragonfly allowed to light on the one lily pad, floating on the one calm patch of lake. And in some moment below all we've been taught, we know heaven is wherever the heart gives itself away. Then, after what seems a lifetime and always too soon, what we love dies or goes away, and the tectonic plates on which our life stands, they heave and break, and the heart we so freely gave, now entangled with the world, now our heart is ripped apart. Nothing makes sense while in this rearranging pain. Nothing. No matter what others say, nothing is of comfort while the heart is reforged in the furnace no one asks for. And under it all, some infinite part of us knows that this too, painful as it is the inexplicable continuance of love. How fires become the bed of seeds yet to be sown. How mountains crumble into valleys. How lovers are stilled into their wisdom. How those who reach for the stars become their own light. Against our will, our heart is remade by the angel of grief, who grips the very center of our life, shaking everything dead within us from our branches, until the heart condenses to a diamond. Hard as this is to endure, this too is a miracle.
May you sit in the beauty and truth that reside in Mark Nepo's words. Thank you, Mark, for sharing that with us, and thank you for sharing the past hour with us as well.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's great to be a part of your good work, too.
Well, thank you. And if you enjoyed listening to Mark read that one poem, After Mira, remember, it's out on audiobook. The entire book, Inside the Miracle, is out on audiobook, and Mark reads it. So that was just a little sample of it. We'll see you again next Wednesday at noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. Until then, my prayer for you is this. May you lead your life by love and live your life with trust. Let go and believe a greater outcome is already yours. Amen.
Thank you for joining us today on Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. We hope you enjoyed the show. Would you like to find out more about what it means to love yourself and trust yourself? Well, don't wait until next week. Go visit TrustLifeToday.com, where Leslie has been sharing about love and trust since January of 2011, which is a long time in the blogging world. Long enough to build up a hefty supply of resources just for you, making Trust Life Today the ideal place for you to visit between radio shows. The site is full of articles on not only loving yourself and trusting yourself, but also on forgiveness, letting go, celebrating life, and much more. Visit TrustLifeToday.com. Poke around. Leave Leslie a message. Let her know how she can better serve you. And while you're there, why don't you sign up to receive original writings? Only about 2 per month, so nothing that will be too taxing on your inbox. Thank you again for tuning in today. We look forward to having you back next Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time on Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust.
This is the EWN Radio Network.